Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, Jeff Parles of Sports by the Book will join us. We will discuss a little bit of everything, baseball, college football, these NBA moves, NFL. We'll go kind of around the board here with Jeff and get his thoughts on Mets, the Yankees. I referred to his resurgent Mets as I just recorded with him, but holiday schedule. This was before the Mets just got shut out 1-0 to the Nationals. So they've lost a couple here now, the Mets have, and cooled off a little bit. And we will get to some of these races here as Jake Irvin, really one of the more underrated pitchers in baseball. 8 innings, just dominance here for the Nats, who have been feisty, not just this year, but last year. And, you know, before we get to Jeff, just looking at some of these races, the idea you can still get Baltimore at some books plus money to win the division. They head into Thursday's play. Yankees are playing the Reds right now, and it's Orioles, Mariners. Baltimore has a 3-game lead in the loss column. Remember, the loss column is the one to keep an eye on. Obviously, the games back overall matters, and the wins matter too, but you can't make up another team's losses. And Baltimore is now 3 clear of the Yankees in the loss column, who feels like they've been in first place since opening day, and they really had been until about a week or so ago. They've just played terribly the last couple of weeks. And I know the trade deadline's coming. They'll probably make some moves. I'm sure they will. You can't patch up all the holes they have right now with Stanton out. They're just, Verdugo isn't hitting, Volpe isn't hitting. It's Judge and Soto and nothing else. They're just getting nothing out of any of these other guys. The starting pitching has regressed with Rodon just not pitching as well. Cole's back, but he hasn't looked like Cole yet. A little better last week. So to me, Baltimore, even around even money, slightly minus money, Baltimore's just a much better, much more complete team now. I know you don't want to be just a victim of the moment where, hey, a month ago you said Yankees are going to run and hide with this. Well, you got to just go based on what you see too. The Yankees just aren't as good as the Orioles right now. So still a long way to go. Both these teams will make moves, but the Yankees are in a little bit of a hole, and you got to stem the tide at some point. And by the time you're listening to this, Yankees will have won an important game against the Reds or gotten swept. Either way, you can't let this get to 6 or 7 because that's a situation where you're not going to catch them. Baltimore's too good, and that's just too many games to make up. If Baltimore is able to get this to like a 6 or 7 game lead, we're not there yet, but Yankees just really not playing well, and there's just too many holes to patch up. You can't make 5-6 trades, and that's Yankees just have holes all over the place. LeMahieu's washed, nothing at first base. Rice is giving you a little something, but bullpen has issues. They just have hole after hole right now, and if you just go through the rest of baseball, I mentioned Baltimore with a 3-game lead in the loss column over the Yankees. Guardians with a 7-game loss column lead over the Twins. Royals now 9 back. Royals haven't played great here these last couple of days, so Cleveland's still in good shape to win that division. Minnesota not dead, but Cleveland in good shape. Seattle, Houston, for as poorly as they played, are now 2 games over 500 heading into Thursday, 1 back in the loss column. You have a feeling Houston might surpass Seattle. That would be my guess, because Seattle just can't hit. They got pretty good pitching. Castillo hasn't been as good. Some of those pitchers, Gilbert and Kirby, they never step up, but seems to when you need them. I always notice, you know, in the past when I bet on them, those guys just always come up a little short in games they need to win. Remember last year they had a chance to make the playoffs against Texas. They couldn't do anything the last couple of days. So I don't trust Seattle. I think Houston probably wins that division. Even Texas, who nobody talks about as a World Series champion, 39-47 heading into Thursday, 8 games under, but only 6 back in the loss column. So Texas not completely out of it. You figure, hey, Scherzer's back, Wyatt Langford's hitting, maybe get DeGrom back at some point. 6 back's not insurmountable, so that's an interesting race shaping up. Philly with a comfortable 8-game lead in the loss column over Atlanta. Milwaukee, 6 over St. Louis. Feels like they're up more than that, but St. Louis has played well recently here. And Milwaukee's held their own too, but St. Louis at least within striking distance, and they've sort of separated themselves at least from the rest of the pack, where the NL Central was all bunched up with St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Cincy, and Chicago. Chicago's played awful, awful baseball. They're 13 out. They've been a complete just disaster, total disappointment. Cincy's still 4 games under. St. Louis has emerged as the top threat if anyone's going to beat Milwaukee in the Central. And then in the West, the Dodgers are gone. So that is the landscape as we get through the 4th of July here. We're looking, I think it's some good, I mean, the wild card races are going to be good. You just have so many teams in the mix. I mentioned in the past, it does hurt that there's these extra wild card spots because there's just not as many sellers. There's just so many more teams that think they're in it. So that's less on the market in terms of, hey, I need a bat, hey, I need an arm. Well, there's not that many teams selling you. I mean, Chicago will give you stuff. Rockies will give you stuff. The Marlins will give you stuff. Maybe Toronto gives you stuff. I would think they would. They're 39-47. But other than that, and who do you want off these teams? I mean, you could find guys off these teams. Detroit maybe sells you stuff. They're 8 games under. They're out of the mix. Oakland will give you stuff if you want anything from them. Angels, if you want anything from them. I don't know. What does Washington do? They're within shouting distance, they'll probably trade some of these relievers. So interesting to keep an eye on in terms of these races. Yankees just playing terrible baseball right now. Absolutely terrible. But I mean, I figure the Cubs might. So maybe there's more sellers than I'm thinking. If the Rockies are a seller, the Cubs, who knows what the Reds do? Hey, you get six or eight teams, and these teams that are selling are going to be in a position of power. Hey, you want a bat, you want an arm, there's not that many places to go. So if you're Toronto and you're selling a Vlad Guerrero Jr. or Bichette or some of these relievers, you can get something back. Crochet would be a game changer, the White Sox pitcher. And I know people that bet him at long odds to win the Cy Young are hoping he goes to the Orioles because there's some, hey, are they really going to give a Cy Young to a team as bad as Chicago? And Chicago's 25-63, a .284 winning percentage. I know it's not a team award, but you wonder, all things being equal, will they give him that award? But maybe if you trade him to Baltimore, he wins that award. Of course, you have to worry, hey, they trade him to the National League, and that kills your bet if you have the AL Cy Young. So we'll talk more baseball. We'll talk a little football, some basketball with Jeff Parles from Sports by the Book. That is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him at Sports by the Book. Had him on a few times, and he joins us now probably in a better mood because he's a big Mets fan, and the Mets are one of the craziest stories, one of the hottest teams in baseball, and just one of the craziest stories I can remember. What a turnaround. Jeff, what's up, man? How's it going?
It's good. It's good, Will. It's, yeah, he couldn't have put together a much different month in the month of June for the Mets than what they did in May after – I mean, May was as bad as that was like 2003. It was the Art Howe days all over again in the month of May. And now they went from the Art Howe Mets to the post-UN assessment is trade in 2015 Mets. It's been a hell of a ride, that's for sure.
Is this sustainable? And do you think there aren't any bets to be made off of the Mets? And just how shocked are you by this turnaround?
I mean, it's ridiculous what has happened. We're starting to see the cracks in the bullpen. We'll get to that a little bit. But, Will, they were as bad as anyone by the end of May. I mean, they were as bad. I mean, couldn't hold four-run leads against the Marlins. Obviously, we now know that Diaz was not 100% healthy in that. When Diaz went out, their bullpen got it even worse. I mean, they blew that game against the Dodgers the week of Memorial Day. That really kind of just put the hammer down of how bad of a month it was. And remember, June even started off messy because they blew the back-to-back games against Arizona after it looked like, all right, they won two against Arizona, maybe it turns. No, and then really it was that series. I know they swept the Nats before going to London, but it was really the game where they turned that ridiculous double play at the end by Torrens that kind of flipped the whole thing. I know everyone points to the Grimace first pitch, which is honestly a fun thing, but that was the moment that Torrens made that double play. You get Alvarez back. I mean, Francisco Alvarez is the most important team player to this team. Just look at the impact that he makes to the pitching staff. And here you are now in a National League wildcard race that, Will, we talked about it when I was with you about a month ago. It was not any good then. It's still not any good now. You're still dealing with an Atlanta team that, you asked me what I bet the Braves to miss the playoffs at that point. I thought, no, they're still going to get there. I have grave concerns about them because their pitching's not that good other than Sale. And now their lineup's struggling to hit. So I'm not even sure. Again, I expect the Braves to be in the playoffs even without Acuna and Strider, but they're not a lock like I thought they were even without them. We talked right after Acuna got hurt. I thought they'd still have more than enough, but they're not that good. The Cardinals are a fraud. They're just winning close. They're just winning close, low-scoring games and beating up on those mediocre Central teams. I don't think they're sustainable, even though they're Cardinals. We know they defy logic more times than not. And then the only team that's right in front of the Mets right now is the Padres, where I know your guy Sammy P, who, of course, you do the Bear podcast with, as the group text, Will. I know Sammy's been looking to fade San Diego after that the beatdown of Boston those first two games up there because – your schedule gets more difficult. They've been hitting an unsustainable amount of home runs recently as well. I'm not sure I fully buy San Diego, even though I think they're probably more talented than St. Louis and the Mets. We saw the Mets destroy the Padres for three straight days at the beginning of this run. Look, this is kind of one of those situations. Why not them? Why not the Mets at this point? Now, the why not is that their bullpen is a disaster, and I still don't fully trust their starting pitching until Senga gets back. And you really have to go make some moves at the deadline to shore up the bullpen. I don't think Alonso's going anywhere. They're going to be within three games, four games of a wild card spot at worst, with the way their schedule is, even though they're playing all these days in a row. Once they finish the series in D.C., it's Pittsburgh, D.C., and Colorado to the All-Star break. I mean, you're facing. I know the Nats have been a nice story. They're not any good. The Rockies are the worst team in the National League. And the Pirates are a young team that's still figuring out what they really are. So I know they're playing every single day until the All-Star break. I know that's hard with lacking bullpen arms, but you could very well see the Mets in a playoff position entering the All-Star break, and then it should be full steam ahead because as this new system has proved, Will, just get to the thing. Just get to the playoffs. The NL playoffs have produced 2-6 seeds in the World Series, and I'm not so certain that this Met team isn't better than the Arizona team that was there last year in the World Series. 2 years ago, that Philly team was actually a legitimate team. It was just an aggravating go of it because of what happened with how good both the Mets and Atlanta were in the regular season. And then you see an 89 win Philly team that was loaded with talent get to the World Series. But crazy stuff happens in this new format. Why not them? I'm not saying they're going to get there. I still think that the Phillies, once they get healthy, are still the team to beat in the National League. But we've seen crazy stuff in this new format. So the Mets are alive. They really much are alive. I mean, if you can find like plus 160, plus 175 to make the playoffs, I think you probably can take a shot at that, even though obviously you missed the best of it. But who the hell knew at the end of May that this run was even remotely in play?
The other New York team, things are not going as well. The Yankees are just leaking oil at this point. What moves can they make? Should they make? And does this turn around here for the Yanks? Is this just a bad run? Or which Yankee team is this? The first part of the season we saw, or the last couple of weeks?
I think it's somewhere in between, Will. I think it's somewhere in between. They're not a team that's probably capable of winning 104 games like they were on pace for before this stretch of mediocrity. I don't think they're as bad as they showed in that series against the Mets. I don't think they're as bad as they showed against these higher-end teams. I think they're about a 93-94 win quality team. Now, they need to get their pitching in order. Both the bullpen and the starting pitching needs to get in order. I know everyone is screaming about the lineup, and properly so, but Aaron Judge is the MVP of the league. Soto has been the second best player in the American League this year. So I still think, yes, it's top heavy. I know everyone gets on Giancarlo, but Giancarlo was really producing before his injury. Well, he was on pace to be about 40 home runs. He was producing. And now, look, Rizzo was not good, so his injury I don't think has played a role in what's going on now. But you take Stanton out, who is the fourth guy, because Volpe is produced, and obviously Soto and Judge. You take out the fourth guy, and now it's, what my concern is with the Dodgers, where once you get past the top of that lineup where it hasn't cracked as much without Betts after breaking his hand because other guys have stepped up. If you don't get the guys stepping up when one of your big boppers goes out, and God forbid Judge or Soto miss any sort of time this year, you need someone else down the lineup to produce. The Yankees have gotten nothing since Stanton has gone out from anything beyond Volpe, Judge, and Soto. I don't know what the right – for a position player, I don't know who the biggest name that's going to be out there is at this point. Honestly, they probably should have been in retrospect, even though Glaber's there. Glaber's not going to be there next year. There's no way the Yankees are signing him long term. I mean, you could have justified a trade for Arias like San Diego did, and just get a guy you know is going to get on base in front of those boppers all the time. You push everyone down, it makes your lineup stronger. I'm not sure who the best name out there is right now, Will. It's kind of – they're a good baseball team. I know they haven't looked like it for about a month, but they still are a good, quality, top wild card American League team. But they need to make some brash moves if they want to get through the American League and then beat whoever comes out of the NL in a World Series.
Yeah, to answer your question about the best position player available, I would think Luis Robert and you put him on maybe like the
Dodgers. Is that good enough? I mean, he's
and he's not even a fit with the Yankees. And he's not even a fit. He probably he seems like a Dodger. He'll go to the Dodgers and he'll turn around or go to Seattle or something. I don't know. He's a fit. Seattle, eventually you get Stanton back. Yeah, they do. And eventually you're gonna Stanton back. You get Dominguez. I mean, you need a position player. You need first as a hole, third as a hole, second's kind of a hole. You need it. And again, there's just not that many teams selling. I thought maybe Goldschmidt, but the Cardinals are back in it. So
yeah, they're staying in it. They're not going to trade
them. Yeah, I would think so. I mean, there's just more questions than there are answers. And the thing is, just like nobody can hit. You look around baseball, it's hard to find bats. It used to be, 10, 15 years ago, pitching was at a premium. Now it's the opposite. It's hard to find guys that can just hit the ball.
Well, I mean, look, that's why being in a division with Baltimore is a bad fit at this point, because the Orioles, despite the fact that they totally screwed up the ballpark for what the current team is. If they had just kept the old dimensions, I mean, they hit almost 60 home runs in the month of June with it playing half of their games in Baltimore. Imagine what they would have done in the old dimensions. And I think that's also kind of playing a role in this too, Will, with how the Yankees are perceived. The team that is their biggest competition in the American League is a lineup full of mashers, old school mashing lineup Baltimore has. And yeah, I know they had that bad series against Houston, but you know what? Every team has bad weekends. We all know that. So I think a lot of the perception of the Yankees also has to do with the fact that the team that everyone, and look, I know Cleveland is the best, right? Cleveland's still having this tremendous season. Baltimore is the, to me, even with their flaws, is still the best team in the American League. And the fact that their biggest strength is what the Yankees are struggling with post top three guys makes the Yankees problem more glaring than it already is. And it is a glaring issue to begin with.
Any awards futures you think are worth betting?
The National League wild card race is interesting, or not wild card race. Rookie of the Year race is fascinating because obviously Imanaga was this favorite. Short price. Obviously, he had that horrible clunker against the Mets. He didn't pitch well his last time out against San Francisco. Skeens has obviously come out and become, how many guys have been better than Skeens altogether at this point? Forget just rookies, just everybody. Not many guys have been better than Skeens since he's come back up. He's the proper minus 270 favorite, but I am a little bit concerned about just if the Pirates are out of it, is he going to pitch enough in order to completely lock that award down? Now, the problem is we missed the good numbers on Jackson Merrill, who has been a stud. And part of the reason the Padres have made this turnaround a little bit, where Machado is finally hitting for power, Merrill has stepped in with Tatis going on the IL, has given them equal production to what Tatis gave them since Tatis has gotten hurt. So, again, I think it's a little too late on Merrill, but I would be the only other way I look at it. And then the American League race is wide open now. If you got those good numbers on Wyatt Langford, I think you're sitting pretty right now. The other question is, do you think Colton Cowser's worth a look? Again, being in that lineup, batting late in that lineup, could get forgotten unfairly. So, because I think he's a stud as well. But those are the races that I'm looking at. The size at this point, You look at the betting markets. I think Burns is going to win that award. I know Scooble's favorite in most shops, but I think Burns, being the best pitcher on the best team in the American League and being the ace Baltimore needed that we talked about all last year that didn't have and obviously showed up in a big way in that series against Texas, I think that's going to be enough for him. I don't know if Wheeler should be the favorite, but I do think Wheeler's going to win the Cy in the NL as well. MVP in the NL is over. If Ohtani stays upright, it's over. And at this point, the only guy that can catch Judge is, I know Gunnar Henderson's second right now, but Soto's the only guy to me that can catch Judge. So I think the chalk is going to prevail in that, assuming both Ohtani and Judge stay upright.
NBA, any of these moves move the needle or trigger a bet for you?
Let's go with Philly. I think everyone's overreacting. I think everyone's overreacting a little bit. I don't think this version of Paul George catapults them into legitimate title contender. I think they're close. I think if you get a scenario where Boston gets hurt, or I actually think the Knicks are ahead of them. I know people got on the Knicks for the amount of draft capital they give up for Bridges. I think Bridges is the perfect type of player for that team, where great defensively, consistent three-point shooter, plays every single night, which by the end, I mean, they didn't have it, people that could play every single night by the end of last year. So I think that move actually is more significant than George in the way the Eastern Conference looks. The West, I know people point to Clay going to Dallas. That doesn't – I think Clay's cooked. I really do. I just don't think he has anything left in the tank. And whatever, for Dallas, it's an auxiliary piece. It's an improvement over Tim Hardaway Jr., sure, but Tim Hardaway Jr. was barely played in the playoffs. So, look, that one doesn't really move the needle. The West, honestly, at this rate, it really hurts Denver that KCP left. I just don't like their depth was a problem last year.
Totally agree.
They're really going to need Jokic and Murray to be 100% healthy. The Lakers stuff doesn't move the needle at all. They're not different at all. And that leads me to just Oklahoma City on the West side, where you sign Hardenstein, great rebounder, physical presence inside, and you got Caruso for a guy you didn't want in your rotation anyway anymore in Giddy. That was the best trade for anybody this entire offseason. The worst trade when you flip it on Chicago's end. But at this rate, Will, I think we're on a crash course for an Oklahoma City-Boston final at this rate. Unless if the Knicks – the Knicks closed the gap. I don't think that – I think they did as well as they could in closing the gap.
What are they doing for a center, though? What who are they playing at center?
They need Mitchell Robinson to stay healthy, which is a gigantic if. I mean, that's the thing. I don't think they closed the gap enough, Will. I think that's why we're looking at the Celtics getting back to the final again. And also, I know people got a Mazzulla last year. I mean, Joe Mazzulla is a good coach. I think that's pretty clear. He at least knows how to manage his team very well. And Oklahoma City, I mean, look, they were what? They were supposed to be the 8 seed at best this year. They get the 1 seed. The playoff experience only going to help that group. And you added 2 really good seasoned veterans, and they should. I'm a little surprised they've not become the second betting favorite across the board. Well, I really am. They should be at this point behind Boston, and you can find 8-1, 9-1 on Oklahoma City. Still, I think that's probably worth. Don't love tying the money up for 11 months, but I don't think you're going to see those numbers by the time the season rolls around. And if they get off to a good start, forget it. They're going to be 6-1, 5-1. They're going to be. They get considered the second favorite all the way through.
And anyone that becomes available, they have plenty to go shopping because they have more picks than they know what to do with. They really do. Yeah. And they're going to run into a problem where you can't make all these picks. You can't roster all these players. You're going to have to consolidate at some point. And you did trade for Caruso, but that didn't get rid of any of these picks. It's almost like you have too many picks if you're OKC.
Well, I mean, you saw it in the draft. I mean, they traded 3 draft picks to the Knicks. Just say, hey, take them. I mean, you're at that point where you're right, but look, they'll move on. A lot of those picks are second. There's a lot of seconds mixed in there. They'll move off of them, and they can always just keep trading first for future first. I mean, that's kind of what they're doing anyway. Also, I will say real quick, I'm very disappointed San Antonio traded Dillingham on the night of the draft to Minnesota, because if they had gone with Dillingham and Castle and just stuck with that, they would have, in my opinion, gotten the 2 best players in the draft at 4 and 9. And around Wemby, filling that roster out with cheaper guys, at least at first, it really going to help things. I actually don't mind the Chris Paul signing. It's just a matter of, hey, how much does he have left in the tank? And is he not going to want out if San Antonio is just not ready to compete, which I don't think they're ready yet. I think it's 25-26. Where San Antonio takes that leap into, okay, legitimate playoff team, things go right, like with Dallas this year, they could end up in the finals.
I would agree with that. Weird one. I haven't talked to you about this, but I'm curious what you think. Did you ever buy the Hurley to the Lakers stuff, or was that just a leverage play?
No, it was total BS, the whole thing. I don't care what anyone says. It was a clear leverage thing. And the other part of that is the Lakers – if it was a serious offer, the Lakers would have offered him 6 years, $100 million. Let's be honest with ourselves here. I know $12 million a year for a coach is a lot of money, but you got to get the guy away, an East Coast guy who, if he wants to take the leap to the NBA, is clearly waiting for Thibodeau to get fired at some point with the Knicks. or that net job to become somewhat sexy again, which may be a while, but you needed more than 72 over six to get a guy like that. I thought it was total nonsense the whole way through, and the Lakers then made a nonsense hire. So what do you expect, honestly?
And no counteroffer from Hurley. No, it was just, hey, this is going to happen. Godfather offer. Then a few days later, oh, not going to work out. 6 years for 70. I rejected it. We go on our ways. We didn't hear about, like, hey, did you reject it because of money? Was there a counteroffer? It just kind of quietly, conveniently went away very quickly. Yeah, very, very strange story.
Will, despite Hurley's quote-unquote psychosis, for lack of a better word, the man is very intelligent. And you won two straight at Connecticut. He's one of maybe three programs right now that gets players to buy in. I mean, Caravan's freaking staying around for a third year in this era. Like, that's almost unheard of for a guy who could have gone to the NBA draft, could have went somewhere else for more NIL money. They're set up again. I don't know if they're, again, going into this year, who knew? I didn't think they would repeat, and then they ended up being the most dominant team since the second Villanova titleist, basically, Will. But they are, he's set up as long as he wants to be there. And if he can, quote unquote, perfect as well as you can this era of constant transfers and such, why the hell would he leave? Why would he leave? He has that job for life. They will never fire him. He can be there as long as Calhoun was at this point.
Yep, and I think it annoyed him that Oriyama got a contract extension and more money, and he didn't get a contract extension. And not only that, he had the chance to use the Kentucky job for leverage, and he very quietly killed that. Say, hey, I'm not going to Kentucky. I'm happy here. Where he could have, even if he was staying at UConn, he could have said, you know what, Kentucky, that's a dream job. That's a lot of money. He could have held UConn's feet to the fire and gotten more money out of UConn if nothing else. He didn't do that. And you know, once you punt on leverage, it's hard to get it back. And I think the Lakers is a way to get back that leverage.
Yeah, no, we're in agreement, Will, 100%.
Anything else, NFL, college football, you've added or bet? I forget. I think I asked you about football last time. I don't remember. We both agree the Jets can be better, but anything else you've added?
I haven't bet anything yet. The most intriguing team by a wide margin in my early research, and we've started doing the NFC divisions on Sports by the Book, the Chicago Bears are one of the most fascinating teams I can ever remember going into a season, because you have a head coach that is almost somewhat in a lame duck scenario, which is bizarre at this point in Eberflus. They had no business to keep him around when you're changing the quarterbacks and committing to Caleb Williams. You have an offensive coordinator who, let's be real with ourselves, Shane Waldron was responsible for Geno Smith's renaissance more so than anything in Seattle. Really do believe that. You have a wide receiver room that, if Keenan Allen has anything left in the tank, could be the best receiving room in the NFL. 1, 2, 3. With Allen Adunze, who I think is a stud, and DJ Moore, who I think played himself into being a legit number one wide receiver. But then, and they improved their defense as well this offseason. But it's so interesting to see, and you and I have talked about this in the past, it is so hard to go. And look, I know it's a little bit different because their number one pick was not the number one pick, their own number one pick this past year with Caleb. It was obviously a trade. But it's so hard still to improve two, three, four wins, even with overhauling the roster in the same season. They're 9. Right now, 8.5, 9, depending on the book. I am looking for every reason to bet them to make the playoffs at a plus price, looking for that. But it's just so hard when you're dealing with a division. Also, on top of it, Detroit is improved. If Goff doesn't go backwards, Detroit is very much improved because their defense is significantly better. And the Packers, if you're buying Jordan Love, there's no reason to think they're going to not win 10 games, 11 games. So, but the Bears are, if you put Chicago in the NFC South, Will, I wouldn't even hesitate. They'd win that division going away. If they were in the NFC West, I'd be picking them to finish second behind San Francisco. But because you're in a division that's so difficult in the North, that I think, hell, if Minnesota, if Kevin O'Connell's as good of a coach as I think he is, maybe even Minnesota's not a total pushover this year, even with the questionable quarterback situation. So it's Chicago is far and away the most intriguing team in the way of NFL stuff. And then college football, I will have a bet on Missouri to make the college football playoff. Call me biased, but I think their schedule is favorable. They do have to go to Tuscaloosa, but that is, I really do think when this is all said and done, that and the A&M game are probably going to be the only two games they're underdogs in. And I don't think they should be a dog at College Station. So you go 11-1, 10-2 in the SEC. That probably is good enough to get you in the playoff. So I'm going to have that, and I'm going to look for right numbers on Ole Miss. I just haven't found them yet.
How many SEC teams are going to make up this 12-team playoff, you think?
It's a great question, Will. So I did this with a friend of mine who does radio in St. Louis, Brandon Kiley. He's on the ESPN 101 there. I went through it. I really do think – so here are the non-SEC Big Ten bids real quick, Will. The non-Power Four champion that they put in, which I think will be Boise State, the champion of the ACC, and the champion of the Big 12. And then I'm convinced that the other nine slots will come from the SEC and the Big Ten. So it's just a matter of what do you think. I think Oregon and Ohio State are definitely getting it. Those are the only two teams in the Big Ten, and I feel confident, hey, you're getting in. Michigan, a lot of changes, but I think their defense is elite still. And Penn State's Penn State. So every big game on their schedule they could lose, but hey, 10-2 in the Big Ten this year might be good enough to get you in with losing your big games and hammering everybody else. So it could be upwards of six in the SEC. Wow. I think the SEC is getting five. I think that's the number that it's going to end up being, that it's five from the SEC, which is going to be Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Missouri, and Ole Miss, I think, are the five that get there. And then you will have arguments from LSU. You'll have arguments from A&M if they're better than I think. There will be some arguments on that front that they should get in over Penn State. I think the Big 12 and the ACC are going to be absolutely hosed more likely than not in this new format where they're just going to get their conference champion.
What about Notre Dame? Do you buy Notre Dame as a playoff team?
I don't think Notre Dame's as good as everyone thinks. I think Notre Dame also will probably struggle in this format more than people realize. I do think at some point Notre Dame will have to join one of the conferences. But if you had to basically say, Jeff, is Clemson or Notre Dame going to get in? Like, is a 11-2 Clemson that loses in the ACC title game as their second loss going to get in over a 10-2 Notre Dame? I think Notre Dame would probably get the nod in that circumstance. Well,
I don't know that Clemson can only have two losses because you're pretty much getting one right off the bat with Georgia and the Virginia Tech. People seem like, I think that's probably a three-loss team because they're at Florida State.
I'm just throwing Clemson out there as an example because, look, unless if you win the ACC, there's only, realistically speaking, in the ACC, there's only three teams that I think at 11-2 that the committee would even consider for a whole collection of reasons. Clemson, Florida State, and Miami. I'm not saying any of those teams are going 11-2 if they don't win the conference championship. I think Miami has monster bust potential because their coach is not a good coach, as we know. I don't trust Clemson's offense. Florida State, there's questions at quarterback going into the year, but I think they're unbelievably talented everywhere else again. Like they've been, honestly, if Jordan Travis didn't get hurt, Florida State would have made the tournament last year. I mean, let's be real with ourselves. They would have put Florida State in, and Michigan would have beat them too. But they would have got in over Alabama at 13-0 with a healthy Jordan Travis. So, I think the ACC is going to really struggle. The Big 12, I actually had a vote in the Big 12 preseason poll. I was one of the five who voted Kansas to win the conference. Just because if Jalen Daniels stays healthy, I think Jalen Daniels is the best player in that league. It's a gigantic if on him. We saw him battle those horrible back injuries all year last year. I was very different than what the vote was. Kansas finished fourth, Utah coming over from the Pac-12. But all those teams are so damn even, I think they're all going to cannibalize themselves. So, like the Big 12 title game, I think it's going to be 10-2 against 10-2. And there is no way they are putting a 10-3 Big 12 runner up in the field. There is no way that's happening this year.
It reminded me, did Kansas keep the coaching staff intact? Because that was a very good coaching.
They lost their offensive
That's what I
coordinator.
thought. Yeah.
He went to Penn State, but that everyone else is intact.
And he's a very,
and
very well regarded offensive.
He lost one other position coach along with the offensive coordinator to Penn State, which is actually, amazingly enough, the first time Leipold has ever lost the coach off of his staff, going all the way back to the Wisconsin Whitewater days. So it's but my whole handicap with them is I think Leipold's the best coach in the conference, and if Jalen Daniels is healthy, I think he's the best player in the conference. That was my whole handicap with Kansas.
Yep, Colton Ecky too is the offensive coordinator that went from Kansas to Penn State. Yeah, it's a great coaching staff. It obviously takes a hit with him, but yeah, your point is well taken, Jeff. This was fun, man. Appreciate it. Before you know it, football.
Well, it's we're talking right around 4th of July. We just have, realistically speaking, one more month to bang our heads against the wall, figure out baseball bets that inevitably will be infuriating, win or loss. And then we really, this 12-team format in college football is going to present so many interesting intricacies.
Yes.
That we have never dealt with in college football handicapping, especially late in seasons that we've never had to deal with. And I'm so interested to see how, obviously we love the NFL. We know the Jets come first for myself, but I know as when I come back on with you later in the summer, those college betting college football is going to be one of the most interest. This is the most interesting college football betting season, I think, pretty much ever coming into it because of the introduction of the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, and I had Brad Powers on last week, and he made the point, hey, the books are going to be a little bit exposed here because they've never had to price this stuff. And maybe like Ohio State takes an early loss and they hang an incorrect number on them to make the playoffs. Just they're going to be pricing this stuff for the first time, which leaves them maybe a little bit vulnerable and they hang some bad numbers.
Yeah, no, that's part of the reason. Like, Ohio State, Oregon is relatively early in the season this year.
October 12th, I think.
And like, obviously Ohio State still has to play Michigan later in the year. Granted, the game's in Columbus, and I think Ohio State, even though we have questions at quarterback, is still much better than Michigan this year. But look, I mean, there are enough early. I mean, what happens if Clemson upsets Georgia? I mean, what happens if that happens? Georgia has to play Texas in the regular season as
at
well.
Bama.
That's relative, like. There could be, if we get an upset or two early that we don't expect involving a team that we thought was going to steamroll to the playoff, boy, we could get some interesting things. That's a great point that Brad said on your show, Will, because he's right. Especially in season numbers, we could get some wonky stuff if we get some upsets that we don't expect involving the Georgias, the Texases, the Ohio States, the Oregons of the world early in the year.
Yeah, and those Saturdays right around when the playoffs start, the college football playoffs, and you have Saturday NFL and college basketball starting, there's not going to be enough TVs. There's not going to be enough eyeballs to just watch everything and keep track of everything. I'm almost getting like anxious just thinking about like all of the different betting angles.
It'll be fun.
It will be fun.
We'll be thanking our lucky stars when that time comes around, as we look right now in July when it's basically at baseball and WNBA. So,
Jeff, appreciate the time, man. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. Tuesday through Saturday. I know a lot of your audience is out east, so noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, South Point Studio on YouTube for Sports by the Book, myself, and technically the contest, we know last man standing, but she was the last woman standing in that contest 2 years ago, and Alex White. So previewing the college version of last man standing out here in Vegas, of course. But we're previewing the Dane sports betting every single go. And we're previewing NFL teams on a daily basis now as well. Well, we couldn't wait. We couldn't wait to get some NFL previews in there.
All right, Jeff, appreciate the time. We'll do this again down the road.
Thank you, Will.
All right, that will do it. Thank you to Jeff Parles. We will be back Monday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you then.